Okay, so thank you. So it was not really clear what the organizer wants me to talk about, so I decided to talk a little bit on 2D turbulence. And a little bit on Lagrangian transport. So they asked me to do really basics, not just basic ideas, so I will talk about the basics, about 2D turbulence, about the entropy cascade, and the energy cascade. So in the room there is people which are much more expert than me in the subject, so you should ask them questions if you don't understand. Then about Lagrangian transport I will discuss passive scalar. Discuss about property of Lagrangian trajectories and how the two subjects are related. I will explain why, what's the role of the zero mode, how is it linked to universality property of statistics of passive scalar on Lagrangian trajectories. Another word for zero mode is martingales, but maybe it's a word that you heard about when people do SLEs. And then, if I have time, I will explain why Lagrangian trajectories have an explosive property. On how this is related to dissipation. Dissipation anomaly. So it would not be only on 2D turbulence. This one is on any dimension. So 2D turbulence is a is an example of non-equilibrium system. It's an infinite number of freedom. It's one of the rare unsolved problems of classical physics. So to describe it, we have a velocity field U of x and t in two dimensions, which is supposed to be incompressible. And then, the Navier-Stokes equation is to introduce the evolution of the velocity field is governed by the Navier-Stokes equation, and a way to write it is by writing for the vorticity. We'll use it because it will be the property of the vorticity is more linked to the property of Lagrangian trajectories. So you introduce the vorticity, omega. And then what the Navier-Stokes equation says that the vorticity is transport, so g of omega plus u. So it means that this is a transport. And then there is a term for dissipation. And then you may have force which are used to inject energy. So the forcing is for inject energy and entropy. We define what it is, the entropy. So it takes place at some scale LF. So the dissipation plays a role at short scale. LD. LD. D like dissipation.
Scale.
Scale, oui, without a S. This equation means that omega is transported by the velocity field u, but it's an active scalar, it's a pseudo-scalar. So omega, it's an active scalar because the velocity is linked to the vorticity by this relation. So we are interested in the when we look at turbulence at fully developed turbulence, we are interested in the limit of large Reynolds number. So we look at the limit when the which corresponds to the limit when the viscosity goes to zero. Which is the same thing as, which may be implemented by fixing all the parameters, but nu goes to zero. I will define it. Okay. So, I may define it right now. So,
are you thinking in a finite box mostly, or?
Yeah, there is a three length scale, or maybe more. So there is a large infrared length scale. Okay.
But in the units which you use for the positive dimension.
Yeah. So you have to. There is unity everywhere. Yeah. You want me to write all the dimension? I forget the dimension of the unit, of the viscosity. But the Reynolds number is a ratio of, It's the ratio between advection term over the dissipation.
Can you write the log particle?
So advection is that, so it has typical velocity, u. Then there's a 1 over length scale, because there is dissipation 1 over length scale square, it's like L, divided by nu. No? So if you fix the typical mean square velocities and fix the typical length of the problem, when the Reynolds number goes to 0, it's the same thing as nu goes to 0. Okay?
Two lengths,
well,
D and LF, and
what
is L?
What would be LF? Yes.
It's not a D or
no. So that's the typical velocity at the injection scale.
The length scale, looking at
LF,
is it given in terms of some of the.
Yeah, I will describe it. It would be, it's a scale below which this term is the dominant.
Right. Okay. So that scale which you put from Reynolds number
in. Excuse me?
If you put LD for this formula for Reynolds number instead of LF, it could be given?
Yes.
So that means LD is.
Yeah. So you will inject some energy or entropy, and LD will be the scale where this term corresponds to the where you absorb all the entropy you inject. So you will determine it. Okay. May I discuss it later?
We assume that F is time dependent.
Yeah, F will be time dependent too. It will be random at the end, actually. So there is a two quantities, so I define what the energy now is. So energy of the square of the velocity, and it's conserved in absence. If you forget about dissipation and forcing, this is a conserved quantity.
So that means that the Reynolds number can be written through LD and LF.
Yeah, probably.
How should we do this?
Maybe we can do it when I will have say what's I don't know the formula by heart. And then I will tell you what's LD, and we will find LD. LD will involve the injection, the way you inject energy. So the Reynolds number will be, you can write it in terms of LF, in terms of nu, the injection rate, and LD. You have many ways to write it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you're insisting so much on the Reynolds number. Maybe I will answer better the question if I understand why you are asking the question. Yeah, so but just we fix all the parameters and then we look at the limit where the viscosity goes to zero. Okay? But we fix all the other external parameters.
Yeah.
So entropy is also a quadratic conserved quantity. It's just the square of the vorticity, and both are conserved if there is no dissipation. On no forcing. Yeah, actually, any power of.
Why are we particularly using this one?
Because they're quadratic, and that's the one which will cascade. So then the.
So they conserve.
Yeah, if you have just this transport equation, you have just. What I want to say. So I mentioned that omega is the active scalar, so it's why I will discuss the property of scalar, but it's simpler to look at property of scalar because then you are close to a linear problem and you can say a lot about it. And it's a scalar which is transport, so its property will be also linked to property of Lagrangian trajectories. But again, it's an active scalar and not a passive scalar. So now the folklore is that there is two, which is due to Pac-Man on the 60s, I think. Is it on the 60s? So there is two cascades. One of energy. So there is a flux of energy and a flux of entropy. So these two cascades cannot be in the same direction. So it's a flux through the scale, from some scale to another scale. Yeah.
What does it mean there's only two cascades? Why are there not cascades in some other
conserved quantity? But because cascade means that you have a constant flux of this conserved quantity by scale from scale to scale, and you cannot have because of scaling relation, if you have a cascade of omega square, you cannot have a cascade of omega to the power 24 because it will not be constant through the scale.
So
there is a flux of energy from scale to scale.
Is that an equation?
I will do. Maybe I will talk about it. So first, the two cascades cannot be in the same direction because of scaling relation. Okay. So they are. Because cascade means that there is, for example, for the energy. To say that there is a cascade means that if you look at the flux of energy from at a scale L, that will be delta L squared divided by the typical time at scale L. Okay.
It's a delta U
L sub L at a scale L. L, just a scale. this is just unweaving argument. Okay, you have a variation of U at scale L, and you have a typical time at scale L, or if you prefer, I can write it R. So to say that there is cascade means that this thing, typical time,
Typical time of what? What changing? Typically.
So if you have a velocity, you have time at a scale L. So what? More or less, it's a turnover time. It's the time that is given by the velocity at scale L. To say that you have a flux of energy means that more or less this quantity is constant through the scale. Okay. So if you have a flux of entropy. This means that delta omega r square over 2r is also constant through the scale. So this cannot be true for on the same scale because of the scaling relation between r and l. There is a gap here. So either you have the energy cascade or you have the entropy cascade. So that's why they are not in the same direction. What happens is that you have, if you inject at a scale L, and then you have the dissipation scale at small scale, and then you have the pure infrared cutoff, you will have the energy cascade through the large scale. And the entropy cascade towards the small scale. So then you, okay, I will explain, give an argument for.
What does this mean?
If you inject the energy at the scale L, it will be transported through the scale, the flux, and you will find it at a scale, a larger scale. Okay? Yeah, in time. And then when you will look at the stationary state, there will be some flux of energy through the scale.
Do you have both?
Yeah, you have both at the same time. Yeah.
So you can't have only one.
But you can imagine a way to excite velocity without exciting vorticity. That would be a potential flow, but this potential flow would be completely driven by boundary. You think that it's just, you could change boundary to trigger potential flow. Otherwise, you have both vorticity and velocity.
Okay. So why you is the cascade good?
Really sort of thinking steady-state physically, right? I mean, otherwise, you would have to talk about the conditions.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's thinking steady-state.
That's how we model the thing. So otherwise, you can look at what happened when you look at, when you inject energy, you look at what happened when everything decay, and you look at the
steady-state. We'll look at the steady-state.
Could you
give some stupid down-to-earth physical example of a flow so that...
I will not give an example of a flow, but so... I want just first to give an argument why that the entropy which goes to the small scale and not the energy. So if you inject energy and if you have flux or entropy, you have to dissipate it somewhere. So the quantity which goes to the small scale has to be dissipated at small scale. So the dissipation rate is given by, if you look at the question which how this quantity evolves, dissipation rate of energy given by the square of the gradient multiplied by nu and of entropy is given by the square of the gradient of omega. And this follows from the fact that if you look at variation of energy in presence of forcing
dissipation
for the variation of the omega in time, there is a term which corresponds to the dissipation with a negative sign, which is nu r square. And there is a term which corresponds to the injection, which is f omega. So this means that this term is the injection, corresponds to the injection of the entropy at large scale, at scale LF, and that's the dissipation. Now, because of scaling relation, if you have a flux of energy, a constant flux of energy, it means that the dissipation rate should be absorbed by the dissipation. So if this one is finite at short scale, because that will be the scale LD where the dissipation will take place, this one will vanish. But if it was the opposite, that it was the energy which was going to the small scale, this will mean that this one will be finite. But because there is a 1 over L squared in this quantity, this means that this one will become infinite in the limit of large Reynolds number. So you cannot have a finite dissipation, finite rate of dissipation of energy, because otherwise you will have an infinite rate of dissipation of entropy in the limit of large infinite Reynolds number. Okay. So the conclusion is that you have a new gradient square in the limit when nu goes to zero is zero, but nu gradient square omega nu goes to zero is finite and equal to the flux of entropy. Okay? So that's why the entropy goes to small scale and the energy to large scale. So this is called dissipative anomaly. I think this name was introduced by Poryakov. Because it's an example of a quantity which naively vanishes in the limit where nu goes to zero, nu is some kind of cutoffs, but actually it does not vanish in the theory. Because gradient square of omega is very singular. Which value?
That will be
the flux of energy, so it will depend how you introduce the you inject entropy. That will be one of the external parameters.
So what happens to the energy?
To the larger scale, and it decreases with time actually. So there is not a stationary state. The proper stationary states, if you look for the energy, will increase linearly in time if there is no other way to extract the energy. So either you have a way to extract the energy by the bond, let's say on the wall of the box, or you have to introduce another mechanism to extract the energy if you want to find a steady state. Yeah.
Because the energy
will increase. What you introduce very often, you introduce in terms of friction, which is it's a linear term, just 1 over tau r, tau is a typical term set to the friction. And this term also mimic what happened in the experiment, because experiment usually what people do, they are in a box, so the fluid, there is a friction between the fluid on the bottom.
How do I know that this friction happens at large scale? From what you're
doing? But you look at, you compare the.
You compare.
It
starts to matter at large scales.
Because
if you put the star small, large.
So you compare this time with turnover time there. Okay. But as I will discuss, actually, friction has an influence also at small scale on the scaling property of
small scale.
Omega. It will be the same term in Navier-Stokes. Okay.
And this whole
thing
is external parameter?
It's a parameter, yeah.
External parameter.
Yeah. It's a typical time which. So it introduces more scale where there is a large scale which may be of the order of this one, above which the friction will be important.
Huh?
What? Not by just the. Yeah, but up to now it's just unwavering argument, but it will be, yeah, when you have a statistical way of modeling turbulence, that will be the average of the situation. Okay.
If I were to go on free, then I would have that u grad u square
And in 3 dimensions, so I was asked not to talk about 3 dimensions. So you asked me not to talk about 3 dimensions. So the scenario is totally energy at some scales, and that's the energy which cascade towards a small scale. There is no inverse cascade, and so there is only a cascade of energy towards a small scale, and there is a dissipation of energy at small scale. Okay. Yeah.
And how do you regularize them?
But everything is regular if you have a finite bit.
Is there some simple way to understand why the flow in the energy cascade is so dramatically different in 3D versus 2D?
But the argument is because if you assume that there is two cascades, I give an argument why it's so different. So then the question is why there is two cascades? Because there is two quadratic conserved quantities. That's enough? It's a poor argument.
But consider the mass of time. So you can't say
okay. So I will describe precisely what are the properties of the two cascades. Before I want to describe how we model it. So we want to look at basic statistical property of turbulence of a property. So we introduce, we look at. Turbulence means that F is random, and you choose it to be so F is white noise in time, and is Gaussian. And G is a covariant probably. So it means that G is almost, the covariance is almost constant up to a scale LF, and then so what we want to find is so the question is, because Pierre wants to know what are the so in general you want to find the statistical property of the velocity field or vorticity field or whatever in the two cascades, the two inertial range. So that's called the, this domain is called the inertial range. So you want to find the statistical property of the field. So what is universal and what is not? What are the mechanisms which are at the origin of the statistical property? So, for example, what is expected that there will be anomalous scaling for the field. So, is there anomalous scaling? And what is expected that these scaling are universal. And for example, in the case of the passive scalar, we will understand why they are universal. We will see the origin of
which expects
explain why the scaling exponents are universal, and this is related to the existence of this zero mode. And but the amplitude are not universal in general. It means that they depend on the way you inject the energy, and here it will mean that they depend explicitly on the on the covariant you choose for the force. Okay. So again, we will see in this, if we have time to see how we can answer this kind of question in the case of the passive scalar.
So what is the dynamic scale?
You will look at correlation function of omega or phi as a function of the distance. Okay. Well, there will be, now I will explain, there is naive scaling that you find by just dimensional analysis, both in the energy cascade and the universe cascade, but this scaling is broken when you look at IAM bias correlation function. So I want to describe the basic property of the two cascades. So that's called the direct cascade, actually.
So what you wrote is flow entropy, flow vorticity, so, and put random force.
Yeah.
But I can equally write flow of energy or
velocity,
and then put external forcing, which I can choose random. Of course, there will be different problems. When I put energy, random, right hand side. I write it. Flow
for energy,
same
equation
for
energy.
Some
particle.
And I also say that right hand side is
a
random.
It will be different problem. That's a bit, yeah. But for that problem, you will find, if I have, so where I formulated it corresponds to a flow of energy with some special forcing, which will depend on the.
Yes. So my question is, why turbulence is believed to be linked by adding random force in the equation, the flow of vorticity, not to any other flow?
Vector velocity, one force is just curl of another.
Ah, yeah, for some velocity, yeah, for velocity or vorticity, that would be the same. Yeah, but you want to describe your basic equation for your dynamical system without forcing is the Navier-Stokes you will not describe. If you want to do fluid mechanics, you will not just write the equation for the energy. Your degree of freedom initially are the velocity.
So you put some randomness in the system, right?
Yeah.
There are thousands of ways to put randomness in, and the answer will be different, perhaps.
Can I ask differently? Does your force conserve vorticity that can be created in pairs?
No.
My question is, what determines the way how you introduce randomness to the system? You can write many equations.
And put randomness in many different ways. Why is this particular way to put randomness is believed to be correct? Since you erased it already, I should have erased it before. Energy is a derived quantity with respect to the basic degree of freedom. So you couple the random variable to all the degree of freedom because you want to mix all the modes.
You can write flow of energy, flow of momentum, flow of whatever, and put randomness in every of these equations.
There will be randomness. Because all the equations you mentioned are derived from the Navier-Stokes equation. So we put randomness on the basic. Let's see that you can do.
Let me ask you the question. So you write a question for flow of verticality and say that right hand side is random.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to write equation for flow of energy.
Yeah.
And then the right hand side will be also random,
yeah.
But the distribution will depend on that randomness.
Exactly, so yeah.
You're saying that the right hand side in the vorticity is random according to this flow.
Yeah, but okay.
But why I can say that random, the right hand side of the energy flow is random according to this flow, then the situation will change.
To change, yeah.
But this is almost an addition to this system approximated by a force. Mm. And it is a force which has some random flow. Now you can take curl of it and get right inside the equation of velocity. And multiply it by velocity and get the force in the equation of energy. You can do whatever, but it's a single force, which is just a force. You know, the acceleration equal to force. And this is force and it's random. It's a single quantity. You can do many things.
Why is force supposed to be?
No, what you believe? No, that's just a model. That's just a model. But if you believe that there is some universe, maybe it's completely wrong. But if you believe that there is some universality inside the initial range, it doesn't matter too much the way you excite the system.
Really?
I know. I don't know. But if this is a standard folklore. So if there is some universality, it doesn't matter too much. If you do it in some generic way, and then if it's generic enough. Which is the simplest thing that you want.
Saying that you have to conserve vorticity. If you excite a vortex locally, you have to create an anti-vortex. So the force should be conserved. Then
conserved, mean?
Conserve vorticity.
But it excites vortex, no, it creates vortex. So. I think. Okay. So I think that's what's behind the universality argument, that saying that it doesn't matter too much the way you excite the system. So you choose. Okay, so now I want to describe just what is expected to be true in the Dirac cascade and then in the energy cascade, and that maybe will be useful for Grisha's talk. So you inject entropy, and so I define epsilon bar as a mean. And so what I want to find is the scaling relation. So you expect that entropy will be transferred to the small scale via the cascade. So you want a constant flux, so you want that omega flux of energy delta that's to have a constant flux. And tau r is a turnover time. So at scale r, so it's r over delta u r. And since delta omega r is delta u divided by r, typically, what you learn is that delta omega delta u is like R, so it should be more or less constant for the scale. So you learn that delta UR, the typical variation of the velocity at the scale R, is linear in R, epsilon 1/3 times R. So UR is typically a smooth field in the direct. Delta omega r will be constant, which means that it's maybe up to logarithmic correction. So that's the naive scaling for the Dirac cascade. It's not the same as in Kolmogorov, that's a Krachnan scaling. So what you learned also that the, if you look at the energy this one. If you write it in mod, that would be a TK here, okay? And by the same scale, you find that you have a spectrum in the Dirac cascade for the when K, the moment to K corresponds to the range here, that it's in a power K minus 3. That's it, track 9. So that's a naive scaling argument just by dimensional analysis. And when you do this dimensional analysis, you have in mind that that the cutoff do not play any role. There is only the integration rate which appears. There is no the large scale where you inject the energy doesn't enter in the scaling.
So this ability to use proportional power, that's something like the number.
No. Kolmogorov is not the same scaling, and we find the Kolmogorov scaling in the energy cascade. For Kolmogorov, the velocity field is not smooth. It's
I'm talking about the same point before.
But not in the same regime. We are talking about the velocity in the Dirac cascade. Kolmogorov is a velocity in the energy cascade. So it's not some. Yeah, but not in the same scale. So when you are in two dimensions, you have two scale domain, and the velocity does not behave the same way in the two scale domain.
Correlation.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that in two dimensions the law is different
and
things like that?
Exactly. Okay. In the Dirac cascade. In the scale between the dissipation scale and the injection scale.
Yeah, and this coming inside of other equations, not from other equations, plus information that we need.
Yeah, actually, I will give you, this is the only exact statement that you can do for turbulence, is this law. This is the law for the third moment, but I will give the exact formula. It's purely kinematics. That's it. So just want to finish before giving the so just to answer your question that if you start with Navier-Stokes equation plus the dissipative anomaly. Or the fact that there is a constant flux, you find that that if you look at Faraday velocity at a scale r, well, we define what it is, so Faraday scale r, average to the third power. This is equal to epsilon I plus 3. So this is exact.
What does it mean? Delta U.
So delta U parallel. So I define. So delta U, you have two points at the distance r. So delta U is U at r minus U at 0. Say. Delta U parallel is a variation of U along the direction of R, parallel to R, okay? So it's R, R, delta U. And delta orthogonal is the one orthogonal to it, okay? So that's just pure kinematics, nothing more. Right? Just come from the Navier-Stokes equation on the advection term on the fact that you have a dissipation anomaly.
So this is exact formulation
of. Yeah, exactly. And that's just a variant of computation done by Kolmogorov long ago, but for today.
Yeah.
In the statistical model, the is epsilon omega is just the, that's the value of epsilon omega.
And your
because it's a, in the energy cascade, I will find. What? What do you mean? I find the scaling algorithm, actually, I find delta cube is. That was a scaling algorithm.
Yes.
Because it's an energy cascade in 3D.
Ah,
so when, what you involve is, what is, I will do it just after. What is constant is energy flux, not the entropy flux. Okay? And that will change the scaling. Okay? So, to answer your question, that concerning the dissipation scale, you will evaluate the scale, dissipation scale, by saying that this term, using the scaling argument I have, is equal to epsilon bar. Okay, so the dissipation scale is defined by. Define the dissipation scale. So this way, it's where you see that this is a, some kind of ultraviolet cutoff, and so nu plays the role of the cutoff. So why this is like an anomaly in quantum fields here. So now this is what you have naively. This cannot be true because these two scaling are actually incompatible. So there is necessarily logarithmic correction. So there should be no logarithmic correction. Because if you have a K-3 spectrum, it means that you have a U will scale like R log R delta U. So you cannot have both at the same time. So one proposal was done by Grisha and Lebedev. So that is so that was a proposal by Track 9 thinks that there is just, I think, logarithm correction to the energy spectrum, and that is proposed by Falkovich and Lebedev, which says that delta omega, if you look at omega square, instead of, yeah, the naive scaling says that delta omega is not really meaningless, but it's just a constant. So the logarithm, there will be a logarithm correlation with the exponent 2/3. And there is an n-weaving argument for these 2/3, which maybe I can explain later, but to understand the n-weaving argument, you have to understand the property of Lagrangian trajectories a little bit.
L should be LF, or
yeah.
The
because in this cascade, you forget about the large ultraviolet. This scale doesn't matter. That's your large scale, that's your ultraviolet scale. Okay. Then, that will be. If you forget about friction, but we know that we have to inject, to have a way to absorb the energy, so that there is also the fact that you cannot completely forget about the friction. And also the friction is a mechanism which is there to absorb the energy at large scale. It has an influence on the direct cascade. And why it has an influence on the direct cascade is because when you have friction, the answer entropy is bounded. So you cannot have such a scaling, and you will have a scaling which will be dependent on the friction. So omega, delta omega r will then scale with some exponent, so if you look at the second moment, as a function of the friction parameters. And everything should depend on the friction parameters, and there is. so it means that in a way the friction becomes a marginal perturbation in the direct cascade. But the way this exponent depends on the friction is not known. But then to some exponent which depends on the friction. Just because when you have friction, then you...
Does friction have the dimension?
It will be the friction as a dimension. So what is independent of friction is the... Okay, that's a dimensionless parameter. Yeah? Okay? So that's your control parameter when there is friction on the exponent. When there is friction, necessarily because the entropy density is bounded, you cannot have a logarithmic divergence. So you have to have a scaling law with a power, positive power. On this case, this exponent could actually will depend on the friction. For large friction, but
the problem is that
it's not physical. For large friction, everything is Gaussian, but you lose all the cascade. Actually, when there is friction, there is not a constant flux of energy, of entropy. So you break the cascade, but the friction is there experimentally.
The omega squared expectation is bounded by friction, that is, there's a formula that's bounded.
Yeah, it's just bounded by the injection.
Okay.
Just because you absorb some
What's the reason why you have friction there?
Friction because the energy was increasing, so you have to absorb the you have a mechanism which should absorb the energy if you have you want to have a steady state. But also in the experiment, what you are doing, you have your fluid in some box plate, and there is a friction with the bottom of the plate. So it's our experiment that is models of friction, and it's dependent on the signature of the fluid.
They don't have any friction.
Huh?
They don't have any friction.
Yeah.
Now, this perturbation is a random force. It is not.
It's a question, but you will never reach a steady state, at least, except maybe for the Galilean environment quantity. But the energy is increasing. And I told you that in the experiment, you always have a friction.
It will be smaller, so.
Yeah.
Without friction and this friction,
no.
Or there's only one problem?
There's two problems when you... Huh?
Two problems.
Yeah.
So how does the friction term affect the entropy cascade now? Though it's a small scale, I understand, but does it affect it at all?
But it affects it because it implies that, yeah. So also it's a mechanism which extracts the energy, it has an influence on all scale. Okay. So as you so that was more or less a general picture for the direct cascade, now in the inverse cascade. So the energy, there is an energy flux. So the scaling will be more like Kolmogorov. So again, you have a mean energy. You define the mean energy ray. Epsilon bar. And you want the constant flux, so of energy. So now it's delta U square over tau R, which should be constant. This is because tau r is a typical turnover time. This is delta u r 3 over. And you find Kolmogorov scaling. In this cascade. This is an exact statement. So again, if you look at Navier-Stokes equation plus no energy dissipation, you find that what are the exact formula? The delta U parallel to the cube equal to delta U. So in a three dimensional, this is known as the Kolmogorov flow, it's a fourth fifth flow. This coefficient is different with a different sign because the cascade has a different direction.
The coefficient is 3/2.
Yeah. And three dimension is 4 or 5. Okay, so this cascade is what I want to say now. Yeah. So the folklore is that so again, this cascade takes place in between the cascade is between L and F. And some ultraviolet scale. So now the ultraviolet cutoff is the injection scale. So the folklore is no anomaly. Which means that if you look at the higher moment of the velocity at some power n, naively, they will scale like the standard with the naive scaling.
Are you still looking?
Yeah.
Now, this formula, you can use bar. And
to the left, there's
LGD
cube is R cube. How should I
understand both formulas? Which formula?
Or another two.
Yeah, so this one and another one.
Left. And that one?
Yeah.
But it's not in the same regime. You have two. So that will be with R between LD and LF. So if you want the exact statement, what it is, it has this is limit, nu goes to zero of that one, limit R goes to zero. That one divided by R squared. That's the exact statement. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the exact statement here will be limit nu goes to zero. R goes to infinity. So R.
And they will mesh and R before
the so that means that this is true for
what?
R large, or maybe if you have a trivial cutoff.
Okay,
it's not the same. So that's a folklore. So this has been more or less verified numerically by.
Do I understand correctly? Sorry, I'm not very knowledgeable. In 3D, this is different. There is multifactorial.
Yeah. Yeah. So in 3D, what you expect is that if you look at so the velocity, we have some moment. So they will have a there is a naive spectrum, and then there is a correction to the spectrum. So some L over R, some power LF, by scaling argument. Some, I don't know how to write it, rho to the N. Okay. With some amplitude, okay, which depends on N. So when I say what is universal is that these exponents are universal, they are dominant when the injection length large, because it's positive, but these ones are not universal in the sense that they depend on the way you inject energy.
And evidently this is from numerics or otherwise in 3D?
No, there is experiment.
Experiment
in 3D. And 2D also there is experiment. It seems to indicate that this is. It's you. Well, all the moment you have to, at the end.
There's no difference between transversal and whatever you do,
save
more.
By there is mix, but this is just scaling argument that I was mentioning. So you probably, I don't know if in the numeric, I don't remember in the numeric the choose.
If I choose n small
multiple. Yeah, it will scale.
N small multiple.
I believe that the scaling thing. Yeah. So, but that's for the. For the velocity, I think this doesn't mean that everything is normal, that there is no hidden anomalous dimension behind the scene. So, there could be a. I don't know exactly which one, but the fact that the velocity is quasi-normal is just doesn't imply that all the quantities are normal, have no anomalous dimension. And more or less, the fact that probably what Krisha will explain concerning the fractal dimension of the contour of the isoline in 2D turbulence, the fact that they have fractal dimension corresponding to percolation is an indication that. That there is anomalous dimension because if there is this fractal dimension, it means that the length, the ultraviolet length scale has to appear in this, what Grisha will explain. And when the ultraviolet length scale appears, it means that. Okay. Another way to understand why there is an anomalous scaling somewhere in the inverse cascade is by looking at the property of the Lagrangian trajectory or of the passive scalar. And if you look at the passive scalar in the transported by the fluid given by the inverse cascade, it's an anomalous. So it means that Lagrangian trajectories in 2D inverse cascade. Anomalous. Meaning that the scalar has anomalous dimension. The passive scalar has anomalous dimension if it's transported by the 2D inverse cascade.
So, Denise, we know anything about the moments of delta omega? Or is it supposed to be trivial now? Does it also have this gap scaling?
I don't know.
It's not there.
The moment is first you, since omega has a negative dimension, when you if you look at the moment, you have a divergence. So I believe that there is anomalous scaling. Or if you, Krisha believes that if you coarse grain correctly, you will find normal moment for the coarse grain variable. But that's why I think that there is anomalous dimension, because omega, there is a singularity when you approach to the moment.
So
to fill omega.
Sure.
As you see, almost nothing is known exactly. So. So the last point I want, yeah?
So if one look at the velocity field themselves, because of these two different scaling, do you expect that the velocity field picture will change at different densities?
Yeah, they are not the same in the... Yeah, I'm going to come back. So the last point I wanted to make just before back, that the fact that the length scale is the injection, that the ultraviolet cutoff is the ultraviolet cutoff, means that we are closer to, we restore a bit of locality because we inject at a very, very small scale. Okay, let me explain why. Okay. Lagrangian transport. So it's a little bit disconnected to the turbulence, but not complete. Okay. Which means that we look at passive transport. So what we have in mind is that we have the scalar, if I would denote T of x and t in dimension d, it is transported by some velocity field. Pt plus u t, and then you tag the system force f, and there is a kappa diffusion term. That corresponds to that's the transport aspect of the problem. On the second, the other aspect of the problem concerns Lagrangian trajectories. This means that these are trajectories that a particle put in the fluid will follow. So it's defined by an equation that position at time t is just a solution of the equation. So that's just a trajectory. If you give the initial position at time s, it would be at time x of t. So the two problems are obviously related because the scalar is transported by the fluid as a trajectory, as a particular. So what? U would be a random velocity field either given by a solution of the Navier-Stokes equation or by the experiment, like in 2D turbulence, or in order to solve the problem, we'll describe the fluid with an artificial statistic which would mimic what we expect to have in turbulence. So the aim of this problem is to try to understand what could be the statistic and why there is anomalous dimension and where they are coming from. So we find that
U is given to you in the equation. U is a given function.
U is a velocity.
Velocity, like
it will depend on the problem.
Yeah.
Or some set of U, some sample of realization of velocity. It could be coming from Navier-Stokes equation. When I said, at the end of the previous lecture, I said that if you look at Lagrangian trajectory in 2D turbulence, they have anomalous dimension. It's just because if you look at this solution of this equation with U given by the Navier-Stokes equation in the inverse cascade, you will find some anomalous property in this trajectory. So U can be given as a... No, but numerically they can do it. No, it's guessing numerically. So analytically, what we will do, we just choose some arbitrary.
This choice, will not be relevant to
No, it will be relevant for physics, for mathematics. Excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, your original
Navier-Stokes
equation was non-linear in U, right? But now we have sort of...
This is a passive scalar.
Okay.
Because there is no interaction between T and U. So it's a linear equation for T. If you look at the vorticity, it's the same kind of equation, except it's a non-linear one, because there is a reaction of omega on U.
So
what we want to find is that... there is a connection between in some simple model. But the conclusion seems to be generic and valid for other models. There is anomalous scaling, even if U is not anomalous. So in the simple model, U will be Gaussian with a simple scaling law. Then there is anomalous dimension in anomalous scaling in T, which are universal. in the sense I mentioned before. But these anomalous scaling are related to what is called we understand the anomalous scaling, which they are related to what we call zero mode, which are some martingale for some processes. And this zero mode means that there is a link to some property of the trajectories. So they are linked. These are linked to some conserved quantities, quantity conserved. In mean by the Lagrangian flow. So it's why actually we have this quantity of martingale. And this is a property of the trajectory, which means that there is some kind of coherent structure between the Lagrangian trajectories. So there's some kind of link to some coherent structure. And then if I have time also, I will explain the relation between the explosive nature of the Lagrangian trajectories and dissipation anomaly.
Structure between, they will
discuss. Yeah, a bit. Okay, so that's a. So the model I will discuss is quark-like model. So first, why the two problems are related? Why the scalar, the Lagrangian, the problem of passive transport, which is described by this one, the problem of Lagrangian trajectories are related. So it's more or less by definition. But we can write a little bit more equation. That if you look at the transport equation with for kappa equal to zero, if you look, so the fluid is transported by the scalar transport, that means that the scalar is advected by the fluid. So if you look at the quantity T of x of t on t, just satisfy T of x of t, t equal to f. If there was no forcing, just the fluid will be transported by the velocity. Okay? It's kappa, that's so, where x, this is. But Lagrangian trajectory is x dot equal u x dot. So when kappa is not zero, you have to look at the stochastic version of that one by introducing a white noise. So kappa different from zero, you look at the equation dx u of x t dt plus kappa dpt. Well, this is a Brownian motion. So once we have this this formula, you see that you will link the statistical property of T with the statistical property of the trajectories. So we model the system by introducing some randomness in the forcing. I forget to set it. Just as before, so F is Gaussian with so that will, that corresponds to the mimics the energy injection of energy for the scalar. The energy for the scalar is just integral of t square. It's conserved in absence of dissipation forcing. And there is a cascade of energy between the dissipation scale and L, and that there is a cascade of energy with that way. So, probably any power of t will be conserved, but again. So once you have so f is random, and to model it, we will have u will be also random. U, and I will specify a little bit when I will define what the Kraken model here is. But once you have that, you see that the set is, so u, the t is a random field because it's a solution of a differential equation with random coefficient. But you see that the statistic of t will be linked to statistic of the trajectories, because if you look at the, let's say, the endpoint function of t, so t of position x and t is just integral of the initial time dt ts of s of f just the given by the trajectory, which is at time t, so x, at the point x where you observe the fluid. Okay. So, as a consequence, the statistic of t is linked to if you look at the moment of t, if kappa is not zero, you have to use it. So again, this is trajectory in terms of.
Will you still assume that f is better for
the time? Yeah. So since you assume that f and u are not correlated, because then you have decoupling between the statistic of f and the statistic of trajectories, and statistic, the moment of u can be written as there is integral over the time, ts, and then just by introducing a delta function in this formula, you find that moment of f are linked to the distribution of the trajectories of n trajectories times the statistic of f. Okay, that's the probability distribution function of n trajectories, which means that the probability that you have n trajectory which are at position x1 at t, x2, xn, time t, and the way at position y1 at s1, yn at sn. Okay? So, if you know the scaling, the property of the trajectories, more or less you know what's the response of the scalar to the forcing. Maybe I will be okay. Maybe this probability is simply the problem.
Sorry, I missed the third term. What is the distribution of the randomness in U that we are choosing here?
We have some randomness in U, I still didn't specify it.
But we haven't specified it.
But there is some, okay?
There's a randomness in U, there's a randomness in
here.
Uncorrelated.
But, yeah, uncorrelated. The
dimension does matter.
Yeah. Everything. It's so general that we can say everything. Or whatever we want. Okay. It's passive, otherwise, if properly. If T was omega, it was an active, so omega was linked to U. So then the statistic of F will be mixed with the statistic of U. And you will not have this factorization. Okay.
If
it's
random,
then you look at. You can say many things, probably. What will happen is that the scalar will decay because there is dissipation. Okay, so it will decay. So you can look at decaying property of the scalar. And more or less, you will have the same thing. Because what will matter, what will be the important piece, will be the property of the trajectories. Okay? Well, that will be compatible with what we expect concerning universality. It doesn't depend much the way you excite the system, so the property of the scalar will be quite independent of F, provided there is a forcing. But it will be dominated by the property of the trajectories. Okay? So it's why I never look at it, but if you look at the decaying problem, you will be able to say. But actually, we know many expansions of P.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that.
But then, for this problem, F is 0.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you will see how it becomes uniform, and you will be able to say something about how it approaches the uniform distribution.
In addition, F.
Yeah. Just because you are blending, so you cannot stop blending.
You have two randomness here, right?
Yeah. So this is, you are a mathematician, so U, E, F, U, F. With respect to F. And this is a PDF in the U field for you.
And it's average over the Brownian motion also?
Yeah, if you, in the case, yeah. Okay? Yeah. So for example, if you look at this, so now I will, as you say, it's so general that we can say so much, so I will specify to the problem that we can solve, so it is a Cracknell problem.
Is that
you? Is a Gaussian. Quite nice in time, incompressible. So people have looked at the compressible case with scaling U R is a subparameter size. Is it size? What does it mean? That means if you look at U, so E, U, X, T, I, Y, S, with translation invariant, void in time, the is divergence free, it's incompressible on the scaling relation for D is like this one. Okay? Excuse me? No. Then why we choose a? If you think about turbulence, R with scaling in the Kolmogorov regime or in the energy cascade, R is like one over scale, like R. U scale like R to the power 1/3.
Yeah.
So it's why you want some irregular field, not some smooth field.
Yeah,
when xi is 2, it means so it should be xi over 2. No? So when xi is when xi is 2, then you're in the smooth scale. Yeah. Okay, so then in
that case,
we can solve the problem completely. And what we will find that that there is this zero mode, and that this zero mode governs the anomalous scaling of T. So it's why T is a universe, the anomalous scaling is universal. So the zero modes are just conserved quantities for the quantity conserved by the flow.
So these are conserved quantities
of which dynamics? Of the Lagrangian trajectories, when you consider n Lagrangian trajectories. I will be more explicit, just, you know. So there are martingale. Does it help?
Yeah.
Okay, so what does it mean? So the naive scaling is, so what's the anomalous? So the social function for T. So if you look at the two-point function, T at position R. So that's just given by the normal scaling that you can deduce from the transport equation. So naively, you will find that the naive scaling argument will say that TR to the power n, 2n, say, will scale like R to the n, 2 minus xi. But what you find is that there is an anomalous scaling, which is times rho n, and rho n is positive, so it's dominant when for l going to infinity, or which is the same thing for R going to zero, and this is a equation function in the limit when kappa, so you are inside the inertial range, because this dissipation scale goes to zero with kappa, so when you take the first limit kappa goes to zero, it means that you are in this range when you take l goes to infinity. So
this L is LF.
Yeah, it's LF, yeah. Again, it's LF.
No, LF is...
Yeah, so I didn't explain much because I spent so much time in the previous hours that there was a cascade, that the cascade is going.
Just, so there's a U random, F random.
Yeah.
Do they have the same LF?
No, LF is just... No. LF is there, okay? With
G.
Okay. So LF is just mimic where you inject the energy, and then you have a cascade between this large scale, LF,
just
on the small scale.
The forces
with
the scale
of the yeah.
How does U scale?
That's just
scale.
Just
because.
No, because you. What you want to mimic what a little bit what happened in turbulence, so where you have a velocity field in the Kolmogorov scaling is not smooth. And that's a scaling property. Okay, that's what you do. And then you want to be sure that there is cascade from a large, like in a turbulence in 3D, from a large scale to a small scale. So it's why you choose this first thing. And then you choose Gaussian whiteness in time in order to be able to solve it, which is what you have in turbulence. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you cannot solve it. You stop. You go to bench.
It mimics, but the Gaussian law doesn't.
Gaussian law does not, and the white noise in time does not mimic what happened in turbulence. But if you have not white noise in time, you stop very quickly.
Yeah, but
And what's the motivation to do this problem? Like a double meaning?
You solve it and you learn something which happens to be true also if you look at Lagrangian trajectories in the turbulent system.
You will emphasize this.
I said it just numerical work.
You
Yeah, or better, because it's non-linear, you don't know how it's right. Yeah.
So you assume that there is a net effect in problem, set of problems.
Now, I think what we learn from that is that we make explicit the role, why there was some universality in the anomalous dimension, and what was the origin of this universality, because it's linked to the zero model we explained, which are linked to the property of the from Bomstedt. And also it was clear from this model that I think we understand better the explosive nature of the trajectories. So the trajectories in the turbulent flow are not like trajectories in chaotic system. In chaotic system, trajectory separate exponentially with time, and in turbulent systems you do it polynomially. So at short times you do it faster. And that's linked to dissipation. Dissipation. So we understand it better, I think, from that point.
So what do we know about rho n?
Now we know rho n perturbation theory. So there was two kind of perturbation theory which was done. I didn't say all the name, but so one was the large D perturbation, which was done by Grisham and his collaborator, and then there was a perturbation theory done in Xi. So we know it in perturbation theory. But to some order, but not exactly. And then we know also the large N behavior, which has some.
The vector field U is not smooth, right?
Yeah.
So how do you define the vector?
Yeah, that was then the problem. That's why you put kappa, and then you take the limit kappa goes to zero. And it's why they are not actually. That's a good point. They are not. That's what I want to explain at the end. The explosive nature of the trajectory are linked to the fact that actually these trajectories are not defined. What you define is the measure on the trajectory. But yeah. Even in the limit when kappa is equals to zero, you still have distribution of trajectories. Yeah. Exactly.
How relevant is the stabilization of the coordinates compared to white
noise? So it depends on the. The regime, I think I forget. I think the incompressible case is relevant, so we don't know. And some regime, when it's incompressible, there is a regime where it's irrelevant. But otherwise, I forget exactly. There has been some work by Kupiane and Gavetsky on trying to see the phase diagram of what was when you incorporate time, you break the white noise in time
correlation.
But I think it's relevant when it's incompressible, so it will change whatever. Yeah. If I remember, but not when it's incompressible, it's there's a regime where it's irrelevant, if I remember correctly. Okay, so and then there is some anomalous scaling amplitude here which depend on the forcing. So it's non-universal. Depend on the way you force. What's the meaning of this exponent here in terms of Lagrangian trajectories is what I mentioned before, that it conserves quantities. It means that if you look at n trajectories, and you want to find the distribution of the finish, you can look at if you pick a function of n variables, n, you can look at average of this function along as a test function for the trajectory for you. So in general, this will be dependent of time, and naively, if phi scale like r to the sigma, then t of phi will scale like t to the 2 minus xi just by scaling r. Trajectory have a tendency to separate. But there is function for the phi of x1, xn, such that e of phi is independent of time. Okay, so they are conserved in mean. And this function are function, scaling function. Which means that phi of the x is lambda to some power zeta n phi of x on the xi n are exactly the animal's dimension. So the dimension here, which appear in scalar field, are the scaling dimension of these conserved quantities. And this is just because actually the endpoint function, this conserved quantity, dominates the endpoint function of the scalar. That T so all the anomalies dimension of the scalar comes from the anomalous behavior of these trajectories, and the, why the dimensions are universal, because so universal means independent of the forcing, it's just because they are linked to the zero mode, which do not involve the forcing at all, because they are just linked to the property that just imply involves the velocity field. Okay. So the fact that's exactly why, so we see why it's called a zero mode, why it's a martingale, it's clear that the process which has T sent to the this function, because it's conserved in time, but if we were conditioning it, will produce the value of the motion at time S, if we condition up to time S, so it's clear that by definition it's a martingale.
Sorry, do these depend on phi?
What? So if there is function phi, you can... such as the average is independent of time. But you can do a simple exercise. You just take the Brownian motion with two n particles, and we find functions which are independent of time. Okay. So just a generalization of this kind of function. So we understand in that model why there was universality. Because there was a decoupling between velocity and forcing, and the leaning behavior is anomalous because it's dominated by this zero. What I wanted to say. Yeah, so concerning the coherence ratio of the trajectory. Generically, when you have trajectories, they have a tendency to separate, and the distance between the trajectory will scale like phi to the 2 to the 1 minus xi of t. That's the standard scaling argument for the separation between two trajectories. So it's quite naively the function would scale like that. So the fact that you have a function which are, it means that this kind of function, they reflect some kind of bound set of the trajectory. They stay based on geometric property of trajectory which go against this scaling, this course, this separation of the trajectory. But you, generally, if you take any arbitrary test function for the trajectory, it increases with time with some power. So the fact that it's some function is like if, like in, you can see about quantum mechanics, you have some bound set which reflects some geometric property of the trajectory, which go against the fact that you think the average increase as a, like a power in time. So there is a way to study a bit more precisely the how the shape of the structure involves as a function of the scale, but it's a bit more, too bit too involved to do it now. So I want to give a few now a few details how you arrive at this statement. Yeah. But so scaling, no. For any key. No. Except for when it's smooth. So, like. So how you arrive at that statement? So the scaling just comes from the scaling property of the velocity. The fact that you have this scaling. So we have seen that we have to look at the distribution of the trajectory. So we look at the probability transition for the trajectories. It means that from time s to time t, we have gg. So we have some distribution of the trajectory from, let's say, y1 to x1, yn to xn, with x, t, 1. So that's since you can iterate, it's a semi-group, so it's there is a generator, so it can be written exponential of t by translation invariance, exponential of t, some differential operators, mn. This is a second order differential operator. So this is just a generalization of Brownian motion. So Mn is a typically Mn is of the form EIGGIEG, but you have to sum over all the particles and so on. So the scaling of Mn is given by the scaling of the velocity, d scale like f to the xi. And when you compute the average of some function here, so if you have e of phi of x, 1 of t, x, n of t, this can be written as a mean integral in terms of this. So if you know that at time s, you start x1 of x is x, but the xg at time s are xg, yg, this is the integral over t product over the dxj from g equal 1 to n pn xj ys phi of x. Okay. So if mn phi equal to 0, then if of phi is independent of time. Okay. Just by taking the derivative. So twice the function are just the zero mode, and again, process t goes to process. So that they are zero mode. We should same thing as saying that t goes x1 of t dot 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 is a martingale. Actually, local martingale. So if you find such a function, then you are sure to have a conserved quantity. So that's Lagrangian, the construction on the Lagrangian side.
You can forget about Lagrangian. Just certain if you postulate certain transition from units. This is a more basic assumption.
Yeah. As far as they were coming from Lagrangian, yeah.
You can think, okay, this is my assumption and I want to check it directly for turbulent flow and it's satisfied or not.
People
will
look
deep, you know, the system which
has no quadrangian projector, like shell models,
and they are both the same, like low scale, low scale.
So this is the critical assumption.
Yeah. I agree.
For that? Yeah.
It's delta correlated in time.
That's the main thing.
Delta correlated in time. Otherwise, you would never have such a formula.
No, no. That's to be Gaussian. That's to be Gaussian. It's always doesn't work. It has to be Gaussian too. Yeah, good. So then that's for one, for the trajectory. And how this is linked to the scalar? First.
Does this assume Markov properties? Yeah, it's two inputs, Gaussian and Schottenstein.
It's Markov because of that, no?
Yeah.
Because it does this form, then it's Markov.
So this is a basic input. You sort of assume
Markov.
Markov.
We assume more because it's delta correlated in time, so it's more than that.
But are they really Markov?
By this definition,
this equation is non-linear.
So not because the velocity is not actually the other. Yeah.
Is there any measure of this? No, it's a finite memory. Why would it be Markov? But what is written is Markov.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's exactly the key point, right? If you believe that they are Markov, then you can apply many, many things. But you don't really know, or do you?
I don't.
Martingales exist for all Markov.
Yeah.
Crucial point here, if, Excuse me, just 20 seconds.
The crucial point here is that you have a Martingale and you have a normal scaling of the planar scalar, and they are the same.
Yeah.
And this is something which goes well beyond Markov process. Of course, we can do analytical theory only for Markov process, but we can do experimental study. And experimentally, go to real flow and check that the power law of Martingale is the same as the power law of the scalar of the real flow. In this sense, there is nothing special about Markov properties here, Martingale and Martingale.
It gives a mechanism for universality on a numerical scaling. Of course, maybe it's not the right mechanism for turbulence, but it did one on Schumacher scale form. This has been checked. This scenario has been checked in for Lagrangian, for when people study Lagrangian trajectories in 2D inverse cascade, which is not delta correlated in time. There is a time correlation, correction time, and so on. But then again, if you look at the passive scalar in the inverse cascade regime, it has anomaly scaling, and the anomaly scaling is given by some conserved quantity for the associated to the Lagrangian trajectories in that flow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It proves that this mechanism is present time to time in physical world. But it's intermittent, so it's present. Okay. So now for the scalar. So.
So it says. So in other words, it says that there is no direct evidence that proves this trajectory or other trajectories are not Markov.
There is too many negations that have been lost in the number of negations.
Data that they are not marked.
Yeah, that is correction time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If chemical data shows that they are not marked, you suggest that they are
marked. I suggest. I don't feel it is a markup, but just this model, first you can solve it, so you can say something which this suggests a mechanism for which could apply in other situations, but we are not 100% sure that it will apply. So it's clear that from since the way I wrote the moment of the scalar that if you know to control this kernel, then you know to control the passive scalar. Okay. So another way to since when you try to control this kernel, you have to introduce the zero mode because they appear in the leading asymptotic of the kernel. It's natural that the zero mode will appear in the moment of the scalar. Another way to arrive at the same statement is by looking at the equation that the moment has to satisfy when you impose that they are stationary. So if you have a stationary measure, you have a set of equations which usually are never closed, like when you have a nonlinear problem, but in the case of a linear problem, they close.
So the diffusivity of it to zero, I mean, the, I don't know what
it is.
The kappa's value is
zero
in your discussion, right?
I mean, I take the limit when kappa goes to zero. Because you can do it for finite kappa, and then you take. If kappa is not zero, it's just add plus kappa. Diffusion term. But then you don't have zero mode and so on. So, the quantity are constant at kappa. So this implies a set of equations which have the form Mn, I think, on the nth moment of the scalar. see the sum of the, for the moment. Expression R on S X R minus X X. Okay. That's just a standard Hopf equation when you, which come from the fact when you impose at the measure invariant. So you take the time derivative of the nth moment and you demand it to be invariant. To be zero. So if M was a, you can do it for finite kappa, but then you take the limit when kappa goes to zero. If M was an invertible operator, there will be no anomalous scaling because you will just iterate this operation. You will invert M, act on that, and by scaling relation, you will get normal scaling. So the fact that M is not, you cannot invert M, is the origin of the anomalous scaling. Okay? So, again, now you see that the zero mode, when you try to solve this equation, the zero mode can always add zero mode here. So you have to take it for kappa non-zero, and then take the limit when kappa goes to zero, and then you see that the zero mode appears in C, and are responsible, and will dominate because they have anomalous scaling, the positive rho. Okay? So that's the role of zero. This mechanics of the zero mode, which explain why they are why they dominate the statistics of the scalar, is analogous to what Polyakov tried to do in 2D turbulence. Because in 2D turbulence, he tried to solve the equation of motion, which are of this kind, u dot cat omega omega equal to zero inside the correction function, by using an operator formalism. So he tried to solve. So what Polyakov did is try to solve u omega zero inside correlation function. But this is exactly what we do here. We just solve this equation u grad t, u dot grad at t zero inside the correlation function. So looking for the zero mode is an analog way, but in that linear problem, as solving the equation of motion without forcing. So it's the same thing. So it's why it's an illustration that to say that when you look at simple model, it gives you sometimes idea how to solve the nonlinear problem. But it happens that what Polyakov did in 2D turbulence doesn't work, but the idea is it's more or less this. Because 2D turbulence, he was doing studying the direct cascade of 2D turbulence, and 2D turbulence seems not to be conformally invariant, I think, probably. Okay. So I think more or less this is what I wanted to say.
Are there more than one zero mode?
There is a collection of zero modes. There are some which dominate. Because when you take the structure function, you have to take the difference of the things. So they have to be irreducible if they dominate the structure function. So there is only one which dominates the structure function. And then besides the zero modes, then you have a collection of definants, which are slow modes, which means they grow slower than that. And you can. Yeah? Excuse me? You have to solve this equation and see that there is a. You saw that. This is the question. Okay. So that's all. So now to compare with 2D turbulence. So it happens that if you look at the same problem, but now u given by the turbulent fluid in two dimensions, the inverse cascade, the passive scalar on vorticity have more or less the same behavior. It's a little bit surprising, just pure numerical computation, but so one is the passive and the other one is the active. They have the same anomalous scaling. And
same means same based on numerical evidence.
Yeah, based on the numerical evidence. Okay, now I am a little bit tired. I was planning to explain explosive I'm not sure of the trajectories, but on how they are linked to dissipation, but maybe it's enough, so I can stop.
Back to the science that he computed by solving the theorem of equation. But they depend on what input would I have to put in? So I'm using the Gaussian distribution, so there's a function going in there, which is the function g, or
so then the input is the definition of Mn, which involves the two-point function of the velocity. So the only parameter is the scaling dimension of the velocity.
Yeah, and so these depend, these have some exponent, right, with these. They depend, they scale in a particular way.
Yeah, these scale, there was a parameter which I called xi. So these scale, dr, scale xi.
That was dij, actually, was it, initially?
Yeah, so di of.
And it's diagonal.
Dij, so it depends on x.
Right.
So and it's because the fluid is incompressible, you should have I j zero.
I see.
So it's R is a C, and then I don't know by R, but C I.
I see.
Minus something, huh? Delta I j. So it depends on psi and D.
Yes.
It's explicit. So the phi n depends on the function of L, C, and D. The formula. It's a good reviews. You look at Fisher review, modern physics.
And what does the problem have to solve in order to figure out the science from
if you try to find zero mode which have a scaling dimension. Eigenfunction of Mn.
Eigenfunctions of this
Mn with the scaling.
But I remember vaguely there was some non-compact group coming in
with the is that for equal to then from the field. When the field is smooth, when C is 2, the field is smooth, then you can use group theory when you solve this is a problem.
Right.
But that's another story. Yeah.
So you can do
RG, you can just the eigenfunction of the. Yeah, you can do RG. Yeah, exactly. You can do RG. So the first few orders were just computed by hand, by equation 1 over D, but else for the C perturbation. And then there's been higher order computation using RG by a group of. Person, forget
it.